So most doctors I speak to don't kind of view telemedicine as one big Venn diagram where everything overlaps. But there is a space for traditional healthcare and what doctors know as telemedicine, whether that's like urgent care, tele-ICU. Those are all traditional health models, but the digital health space, it's a whole different world. Over here, these are companies that are backed by venture. They're employee-based or insurance-based companies that are trying to cut cost. They're value-based care companies where a telemedicine company is providing care to a business to reduce their insurance cost and as an employee benefit.
What if you could reclaim hours of free time each week, create legacy building wealth, and devote more energy to your passion projects without giving up on your career as a life-saving MD? Dr. Vikram Raya is a functional cardiologist, high-performance coach, and real estate expert, is here to give you the tools, strategies, and solutions you need to transform your life, unlock your limitless potential, and achieve greatness, all while freeing up your precious time. Welcome to Limitless MD. Let's dive in.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Limitless MD. I have a really fun guest here. He's a good friend of mine. Sunir Chandler has been a friend, a client, and for many of my friends, he's been a mentor as well. He runs a phenomenal company called Air Academy with his partner, Takashi, and they're on a mission to revolutionize medicine. And it's really exciting how they made these amazing advances in telemedicine to where this has become a preferred choice for a lot of physicians as times are changing in medicine. So Sunir, welcome to the show, my friend.
And thank you so much for having me, Vikram.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's all so much I want to get into today. I really am wanting to go in depth with you because you have that expertise. And I think you've just been an open book and been on a mission and sort of been a missionary to help physicians unlock a lot of the freedoms we talk about. So let's start with your origin story. Before we do that, tell us what do you do as your day job right now? Talk to us about the company and talk to us about how you spend your time.
All right. So my day job consists of probably three things. One is working as a clinical physician for a couple of different telemedicine companies. Then I run All-In Remote Physician Academy or Air Physician Academy, where we teach doctors how to become 50 state and DC licensed in 50 states and DC and enter a career into telemedicine. And the third is a physician staffing program that we run where we place doctors with digital health companies to get them more opportunities.
This is really interesting. So, you know, about 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was really locums was the only alternative outside of traditional in-practice sessions that people would have. And obviously people would go to industry as well, but locums was an opportunity where you have locums companies that would help staff you at different locations. You would go, you negotiate salaries, and you'd go in there. What you've done is you've transcended the physical space into the digital space, it sounds like. And you obviously are doing it yourself, so you're a believer in the system. You're an actual telemedicine doctor. But
on top
of that, you've decided to take on the mantle of becoming an educator and a teacher and a mentor and helping doctors learn this methodology. And then finally, you're not only helping them learn it, but then once they learn it, then you're helping them find a job or a contract, if you will. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing my best. Yes, that's all I can do.
Okay, but this is not normal, Sunir. Where in the hell did you get this idea from? And, you know, what makes you wanting to be this telemedicine evangelist and really help people in this space? And why not? I think I remember you telling me back in the day you're an ER doctor or something like that. Mm-hmm. Help me understand this, your origin story. Where did this all transpire? How did you even come up with this idea? And who gave you the right to have the audacity to go and say, hey, let me change medicine across the country and perhaps across the world?
All right. So I, like you said, I'm an ER doc, and I had been working in a local emergency department for about 20 years when the pandemic occurred. Everyone here, like, no, like, I don't want to talk too much about that. It brings me a little PTSD. But what happened then is my opportunity to earn income went down because of the cutting the shifts that I had. So I wasn't going to work
anymore. Yeah, where were you practicing?
I was working in a hospital right outside of Boston.
Okay.
And 40% of my shifts got cut. And you know, Vic, that I got three daughters, they're all teenagers, and I got scared. We didn't know how long the pandemic was going to last. We didn't know what was happening to us. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to pay for the college.
Well,
so I decided to try to do something, which was to try to get into telemedicine. I really did it out of really just for necessity. I wanted to do it because I had to do it. I was forced to do it.
Interesting, right? Like, we do things out of desperation more than inspiration sometimes.
Yep. And when I got there and started working in it, I realized I really liked it. So it sits at this weird intersection. I know I've talked to you about, like, that achy guy moment in the past. For me, if it fits in, like, you know, I am the technology guy. I'm the guy who wants to get the first iPhone and stand in line, even though I did not do that this time. I love the fact that it has an entrepreneurial bent to it that I did not have in the ER. I love the fact that it's innovating access to care, innovating care delivery models. And I can make good money at it. Like, honestly, all five of those things happened, and it hit that sweet spot for me that I didn't know existed. So that's how I started doing it myself.
So what year was this when you started exploring all this?
2020.
Okay.
And then I grew my licensure. So, like, in order to get more patients initially, you need more licenses. You can extend your reach beyond your local community. I grew my licensure to include 50 states and DC. And along the way, I met Takashi. Takashi and I were working
Takashi, for the review listening, is his business partner and friend.
Yes. Yes. Met with Takashi while working on a telemedicine platform. It's crazy. He lives in Hawaii. I live in Boston. And working together as colleagues, we were able to create a friendship and a business relationship. It's amazing. We started talking, and he convinced me to join a physician entrepreneurship group called Limitless MD. And while we were there, the coaching, Vic, you, Mike Wu Ming, you heard our story, and you said, you know what you guys should do? You guys should go out and teach other doctors how to do this. So we did. Actually, it was about 6 weeks after you told us to do it that we had our first cohort. We really ramped it up quickly. We didn't know what we were doing. We had never run a business before. We didn't really have a curriculum, but we basically mapped out what we thought was important for people to know so they didn't make the mistakes that we did. And then we went ahead and did it. And then we learned from it, iterated, improved it the next cohort. Improved it the next. We've now taught 150 people how to be nationally licensed physicians.
And guys, they have a special name for their people. They call them 51ers.
51ers.
And it's cool. It's they found something unique in the marketplace. It was already available. It's not like they created telemedicine, but what they created was, hey, this is actually a career that a lot of physicians can shift from traditional medicine to this and do this long term. This is not just like a means to an end. This could be your end, you know, like this could really be the thing. So tell me about telemedicine as a career. Like, what does that look like? What does it feel like? What kind of income? Give me real numbers. Like, you know, you can say, hey, this is what a physician would make traditional, and now they're making this. Like, I want people to get a really good microcosm of what it feels like to be a 51er/telemedicine doc as a career.
All right. So I'll try to answer this as best as I can. I think that everyone who's come through our program has a different path. Everyone utilizes telemedicine for very different reasons. So I don't think there's one person that can define us all. How I would say it is A lot of people ask me why become a 51 or why not just get 10 licenses? Well, the 51 or if you get 51 licenses, it gives you maximum leverage. It gives you maximal opportunity and optionality. It allows me to schedule my days the way that I want to, rather than be forced to be fit into a box that my employer puts me into.
So let's break that down here. Okay, you saying, okay, you know, most people have a couple of licenses, you know, 4, 3, 4, 5 at most, right? I think at most, ever have
8% of the country has 3 or less. Yeah, 8% of doctors.
I think at my max, I had 3. I think I had 4 licenses, maybe at my max. But you're saying there's optionality when you get to 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 51, if you will. First of all, there's a lot of questions there. But first, let us justify the concept of optionality. What do you mean by optionality leverage? And I know the answer to this, but I really want you to delve into this to where you can explain, you know, the fact that you have negotiating power, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it like this, when I was working in my emergency department, the number of patients I could see would be the catchment area of my emergency department.
Yes.
It wasn't even everyone in the state, unless I was doing locums and going everywhere in the state. When you get to 51, you open your market up to a bit over 300 million Americans. So I can see every patient in America if need be. So that gives me a lot of leverage when I'm talking to companies who need clinical services from me.
Let's focus on that. So now you're able to basically say you can pick and choose
Yes.
I want to get to really the gist of it all. By you having more licenses, you have leverage and you can do arbitrage and do geographic arbitrage and location arbitrage and different company size arbitrage and say, hey, look, I'm a very, you know, well sought after ER physician, dermatologist, radiologist, whatever that is. I have all these licenses. This is my work hours I want. This is the income I want. This is the contract I want. This is the days I want to work. Who's interested? And now I can start piece together an ideal schedule, an ideal sort of a menu of options, a menu of services I'm providing a group of employers. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. And so that's the justification for the 51. Now tell me, how much does it cost to do 51 licenses?
If you were going to go and get your license yourself and fill out all the applications, it's around $30,000 to $35,000. If you are going to get a licensing specialist to help you, it's around $55,000 to $60,000. I would much rather pick the second option.
Yeah.
Because you have to do it correctly. There's a lot of administrative work. And, you know, Vic, you always taught us, like, you should be working at the top of your license. This is that you can spend your time doing something else rather than this.
So the key really is like what they're suggesting is, you know, do what you do best and delegate the rest, right? Like if you're hourly, like, you know, 50K between 30K and 50K, like if you can just get one additional contract or one work couple of extra hours, you know, whatever, you can easily write this off. But the brain trauma that you're saving, the brain damage you're saving from doing these applications, on your own is not worth it, right? Like, this is what you want to do. You want to pay someone to do this work for you, and you just provide the information, right? They're helping you fast track all of this.
That's true. That is absolutely true. So there is the opportunity cost and brain trauma, but also getting licensed in one state is a very different animal than getting licensed everywhere else.
No. So yeah, what I'm mentioning is instead of them trying to get 51 licenses where they do the manual labor.
Yep.
You're suggesting, like, I agree with you, get a specialist, someone to fast track the whole thing where you get the results with paying a small fee, but it's worth it because otherwise it's not the brain trauma you're going to experience doing it yourself is not worth it.
100% agree. What I was saying that in addition to that, there is a specific strategy that you need to execute.
Oh, I see.
And if you don't do it right, it's going to cost about $30,000 more, take 2 years. And a lot more administrative work. So it's not even like, you know, some, you know, doctors are like, we have big egos. We think we can do everything, right? So this actually takes a special skill set to do correctly. Right. And if you do it wrong, you're gonna suffer from it. So it's not just the brain drug.
After yours and Takashi's trial and errors, you've perfected a way to get the 51 licenses that is streamlined, optimized, and accurate to where it makes sense to do it the way you're suggesting, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So there's so that's exactly why, you know, I always say, you know, either you can pay with money or you can pay with time, right? Like, I'd rather pay with money because time is a non-renewable resource. And so—
Exactly.
We can get this figured out. Okay, so now they know the why. There's a way to practice, you know, their career, and they can get these licenses. Now tell me what kind of, like, what is the difference between you being an ER doctor, for example, as in the actual hospital versus you being online? What are you doing that's different? What are you doing that's similar?
All right. So there's definitely different strategies to take care of patients online than in the emergency department, right? So I do have to have a different risk tolerance. I do have to understand what I can take care of appropriately over the internet versus in person. But it also allows me to try to take care of patients who have been sort of like disenfranchised by the traditional healthcare system. There are people that don't get treated in the way that they should, in the speed that they need to be, that you can innovate with digital health and make that like less frictionless. I'll give you a quick example, and it's just an easy one to explain. HIV PrEP medication, that is 99% effective in preventing HIV in people who engage in high risk behavior. 22% of this country is on that medication. That 22% of eligible people in this country are on that medication. There's a big gap there. There's 78% of people could be on that medication, and it could be life-saving for them. They're not getting it through the traditional healthcare system because the biggest complaint that patients have is that primary care doctors don't feel comfortable prescribing that medication. I don't know why. I'm not going to speak for all primary care doctors, but hey, I mean, I learned how to do it in 4 hours. There should be zero barrier to this medication, and it's digital health companies that are filling that barrier. So
that's an example of you going beyond just being an ER doctor and you being sort of an online physician specialist that's able to do different categories of medications, services,
mm-hmm.
Clinical work online. So that's one example. Give me another example of something unique that you're trying to do online that maybe there's a need for it.
Yeah, actually, there's a big movement into this longevity space.
Yes.
So I'm working with a company as their PC owner. So I'm helping them stay compliant as their owner of their medical practice, hiring their physicians, developing protocols, overseeing their medical director, developing protocols, and making sure that they do not violate any corporate practice of medicine laws, which 33 states in this country has. Their mission is to specifically help women going through menopause who are athletic continue to be athletic and extend their life, but not only their life, but their quality of life, so that they can still go run marathons, they can still do all the things that made them who they were up to that point.
Okay, so
that is like a pretty niche thing that you can do.
I'm getting a sense that these are all very niche things. These are very unique things that, you know, there could be physical clinics for, but there may not be. And there's unique companies that are providing these services, so they're looking for doctors such as yourself. Let's talk about really the concept of insurance versus cash pay and private ownership versus public ownership and governments involved. I know based on my own research and based on what I'm getting from a lot of physicians out there that in telemedicine, there was an exemption, at least for the Medicare, Medicaid population, that, hey, it was for COVID and it was going to expire October 1st of this year, 2025. Obviously, we're in October 23rd. So beyond that date time right now, but there's this thing where, hey, they're no longer allowing traditional clinics who used to do both in-person visits and telemedicine visits. Is that affecting your business model, or is that in any way changing what you do?
Yeah, so this is a great question. So honestly, this is not a concern of mine. So most doctors I speak to don't kind of view telemedicine as one big Venn diagram where everything overlaps. But there is a space for traditional healthcare and what doctors know as telemedicine, whether that's like stroke coverage, urgent care, tele-ICU. Those are all traditional health models, but the digital health space is a whole different world. Over here, these are companies that are backed by venture. They're employee-based or insurance-based companies that are trying to cut cost. They're value-based care companies. They generally pay doctors in these programs with fee-for-service cash. So when all this government shutdown happened, it didn't affect anything for my business model or our businesses.
Okay. So it's really a direct-to-consumer cash pay model, and that's the kind of, contracts you're getting to employ your telemedicine services.
Direct-to-consumer or business-to-business, where a telemedicine company is providing care to a business to reduce their insurance cost. And as an employee benefit.
Okay. This is phenomenal. So it's really insulated from a lot of things that typically physicians are worried about, like, you know, declining reimbursements, all of the kind of things that normally people get a sense and be wary of.
Yeah. And also, I think it's totally important to talk about finances there, but it also allows for space for innovation. I think like the two examples that I gave, I think they're really cool. I think it's something that serves a need.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's anything like that you can find in the traditional healthcare space.
Let's just put some numbers here, because I know the listeners are probably curious, like, hey, like, that's all good. It's all theoretical, but give me some real numbers. So, hey, I'm a ENT doctor. All right. I make $400,000 a year in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I go all in to Tela, and I go through AIR, I get my 51, and then you guys help me find some contracts and jobs. What does my income look like? What does my job description look like? What do I do on a daily basis? How many hours am I working? Just use a simple example and play with it.
Okay. So what I would say is that forget about your potential. I'm going to tell you what I think most doctors want.
Right.
All doctors really want that are in this phase of being burnt out, they want to continue to use their clinical skills.
Yes.
I think most people are thinking about a path out. I think digital medicine gives you a path in to continue using your skills. So that's one thing. The second thing is that they want to replace their income and have some more time flexibility with their families. I think that if you have 51 licenses, you can replace your income, which I'm averaging somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 for a doctor.
Okay.
You can replace that in about 20 to 25 hours a week.
Okay.
Of work that are scheduled around your priorities. And then what you do with your time after that is based on how you value time. It's based on your values. We have people who are starting their own business. We have people who are in your program right now or teaching your program, investing in real estate. We have people who work 50 hours a week in telemedicine. We have people who go and golf. We have people who spend more time with their family. So the potential is very high, but really what the real potential is with your time and how you choose to use your time.
So you're being a doctor, but perhaps it's doctor 2.0, and it's done with at least, you know, the concept of, hey, you could probably earn equal to or greater than what you were making before with either a diminished amount of time or even half the amount of time. Is that right?
Yes. And on your schedule. I mean, the way that Takashi gives us a great example.
They have time flexibility, not necessarily time freedom, but you have time flexibility and geographic freedom.
Yeah. So there is this like a low rate for a telemedicine visit, like an urgent care telemedicine visit is about $30. So, and they take about 5 to 10 minutes. Let's say 10 minutes. If I do four visits a day, one in the morning when I wake up, one when I'm folding the laundry, one before I go to sleep, and, you know, throw in one when I'm walking my dog, because I can do that on my phone. That's $120. That's 40 minutes a day, right? Like right there. And what do I do for 40 minutes? How much time do I waste? How much time, how many times do I waste 40 minutes watching Netflix, doing stuff that's just not productive? $120 a day. Well, what does that work out to, Vic? Is it, I think it's like $9,000 a month. If you do it.
$100K a year, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty freaking good for 40 minutes a day of like no sweat off my back.
Right.
Now expand that to actually doing more than four cases a day and having enough volume to take care of that.
So again, the numbers really can project out. Let's talk about trends. Let's say we've been doing telemedicine for a couple of years now, following this more of the direct to consumer pay, cash pay model. And, you know, I have a couple of contracts. I got my 51 licenses. Where do people evolve their telemedicine journey? I think in the green room, we're talking about pathways. Maybe you want to start. And you did throw out in your own conversation how you're a PC owner. I know that buzzword gets thrown out quite a bit. So we're not going to probably break down in entirety what that means, but high level, maybe you can talk about maybe some of the three pathways, maybe leadership. We talked about advisory work and then the PC ownership.
Exactly. So I think in the beginning, you know, if you're a physician, an entrepreneur, sometimes you have to try things before you see if you like them. So we tell people to try a bunch of different types of opportunities, create a portfolio of companies. Some of them you're going to like, it's like in the ER, there are cases that I did not enjoy taking care of. You know, in the beginning of my career, I loved taking care of lacerations. In the end, I did not want to spend the time doing that. So you're going to try a bunch of things. You're going to learn exactly what you like and you don't like. And eventually you can start picking the type of medicine that you want to work clinically. So there's that clinical pathway. The second pathway is a leadership pathway. There are so many startups. There are so many companies that need a physician's advice and a physician's leadership. These are usually started by people without any medical experience. So even telling them how like an EMR works, what you'd need, what you need from like clinical workflows, showing them how to do that, advising them on clinical protocols, advising them on medical ethics, because a lot of telemedicine right now can be viewed as e-commerce, and it's up to the physician to show people that this is not just a widget you buy. This is like people's lives you're helping. And you need to make sure you're delivering care, not, you need to make sure you're delivering care and not generating revenue. So that's like a medical directorship and a CMO kind of role. There's advisory roles. We have people who've gone through our program who sit on like boards of diversity or help with marketing roles for companies. They go get speakerships. They go on tour and talk about their company. And then the last thing we were talking about is a PC owner. So there's 33 states that have corporate practice of medicine laws, which does not allow for a non-physician to run a medical practice. That MBA from University of Michigan should not be running a medical practice. So you need a doctor at the top to make the best clinical decisions for a company's patients. You need that checks and balances in there. As a PC owner, that's your role. That's essentially
your role. Stand for?
Professional corporation.
Got it. But they need a physician to be the head of that corporation.
Yes. Because we're the ones trained with medical ethics.
Right.
We're the ones who understand the consequences of
the treatment. The holy grail of some of the things that people who are interested in entrepreneurship sometimes seek telemedicine out for. So the sky's the limit in terms of opportunities, right?
Well, yeah. So there's all these companies that are popping up now. It's from a $30 billion industry to an $80 billion industry in the next 5 years. So there is opportunity to become a leader for companies. It takes time. It takes skill. You have to invest into it. It's hard work. I shouldn't say it's hard work. It's work. And then when you get into it, it's super fun because now I'm sitting in a room with a CEO, a CMO. I'm sitting in with the CFO, and I get to learn from them and hear their conversations and hear what they think about business. And to tell you the truth, that's where I got the skill set, or like I've taken the skill set I learned there back to help run a couple of the businesses that I have.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Good for you. We've really explored this concept of telemedicine quite a bit. What's your message out there for doctors who are perhaps curious about this, telemedicine curious, if you will?
I think most people I talk to when I talk to doctors about telemedicine, the first thing that they say to me is, oh, I hate telemedicine. I can't do it. I don't think they're thinking about it correctly. They're thinking about it when they're working for their clinic. Because they're worrying about the coding. They're worrying about the things that you were worried about or you asked me about earlier. I think it's an opportunity to try go to a totally different world. I know it's an opportunity. I've lived it. But you can go to a different world. You can help innovate, improve access. It can make you some good money. And you can be anywhere in the world. Well, maybe not anywhere in the world, but anywhere in the country on your own time working.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. What's a good way for people to get into the AIR ecosystem, learn more about the becoming a 51er, perhaps working with you? What's the best contact? How do they get more information?
What I would do is I would go to airphysicianacademy.com and sign up for an information session. We hold one every Monday, and you can come learn more from us.
Awesome. And before I let you go, where do you want to take all of this, man? Where's the big mission here?
There's a few different missions. Like, honestly, at the end of the day, I think that doctors need to be taken care of well, and we need to treat them better. And if we do that, if we focus on that, the quality of lives of our patients will get better. So just want to show doctors a different way that they may be happier in. And then once they're there, I think everyone benefits. You want good doctors who are happy treating patients. You don't want burnt out doctors who hate what they're doing treating patients. No one wants that.
That's awesome. That's great. Thank you again, Sunir. Say hi to Takashi for me, and we'll see you guys soon. And guys, please, if you're interested in this or if you want to find out more, take Sunir up on his offer to learn more at AIR Physician Academy. Great.
Appreciate it, Vic.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you so much for following the podcast. Appreciate you guys. And until next time, be phenomenal.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Limitless MD. If you found value from this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with a friend and let me know by leaving a review. For more information, make sure you check out the links in the show notes below or simply visit vikramraya.com. Until next time, be phenomenal.